Go to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602 now. Don't wait. You know these times are too important. Please give as generously as you can. It's simple to make a recurring monthly donation, and it only takes a minute. Just go to WBAI.org and click Ways to Donate. Unlike living in New York, it is that easy. WBAI has spoken up for New Yorkers for more than 60 years. Now, it's time to speak up for WBAI. Go to WBAI.org to support radio you can trust. Give to WBAI today. Be heard.
The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. The time now is 6:30. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion. That's coming up right about now. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Regenerative culture is an important part of what Extinction Rebellion is and does. To talk about regenerative work and what regenerative means, we have a special guest. Chelsea McMillan is the founder of the Brooklyn Center for Sacred Activism. She is an ordained interspiritual minister for Extinction Rebellion. She co-coordinates the Regenerative Culture Reading Group for the New York City chapter. Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. And it's the working group, not the reading group.
Did I say reading group?
Yeah.
Regenerative culture, that must have been a reflex.
Well, welcome, Chelsea. It's such a pleasure to have you here. You know, many people who just read the papers or have sources of information that are, you know, years old, describe feeling profoundly affected or even traumatized when they learn more of the science about the severity and the urgency of the climate crisis. And Extinction Rebellion even says of its heading for extinction talk that it could cause existential dread. Now, tell us about this existential dread and how people can handle it in a healthy way and in a productive way.
Well, first, I want to affirm and validate anybody who's feeling existential dread, because it is a totally normal way to be feeling right now. And it could be showing up in lots of different ways. It could be numbness. It could be sadness. It could be anger. It could be disillusionment. It could run a whole gamut of emotions, and sometimes many emotions at once, which is totally understandable and expected when you are facing existential crisis, when you're both experiencing and witnessing the climate crises all over the world. Seeing our biosphere basically like collapsing and different species dying and like the havoc that's just being wreaked across the planet. It's totally normal and expected to be feeling some sort of existential dread.
Exactly. I just wanted to step in there for a minute. You know, I'm here in the Bay Area, and when we had those orange skies, which the pictures did not capture how deeply orange they were. It was sort of the biblical dread. It was just really the most heavy feeling a lot of people really had. It's like, this is it. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's, it's sometimes a touchy subject to be talking about existential grief and dread and all these things, because the climate crisis affects us all differently depending where we are in the planet. So there can also, especially for those of us who are in the Western industrialized world, and we take a huge part in the carbon footprint that's like contributing to all of these things, then we also have this like added layer of guilt. And like here in New York City, it's like I don't really have to worry, quote unquote, worry about the climate crisis on a day-to-day level, except that like it's messing with all of the cycles of the earth, and we get Hurricane Sandy's and, all these kinds of things. But also when you're witnessing death and destruction, that's of course going to, especially when we're interconnected and we're interdependent, we're going to feel what others feel, and experience grief at the things we're witnessing, even if we're not always experiencing it. Even if, how much of the year in California you're not experiencing wildfire season. I mean, now wildfire season is like,
it's like all
basically
year.
All year. Yeah.
If I might add just one word to what you said about living in New York City today, 2021, on a day-to-day basis, you don't have to deal with the climate crisis on a day-to-day basis yet.
Yeah.
The word yet is important there. It will flood. And even saying
it
that.
It will flood, food shortages, I mean, all sorts of things.
This is one of the reasons that Extinction Rebellion emphasizes the word regenerative so much in much of the work that it does within the chapters. What does the word regenerative mean in an Extinction Rebellion context?
Well, it's often hard to define, and it can mean a lot of things to different people. The way that we've been talking about it in XRNYC is really drawing the distinction or connecting the dots, I should say, between personal well-being, communal well-being, and systemic or planetary well-being. And that all of these things are totally interconnected. And as we take care of ourselves, taking part in things that are quote unquote regenerative, like meditation or community nights or dealing with our climate grief, we are actually, refueling ourselves. We're like, we're making it so that we have a sustainable movement, that we're like taking care to move a little more slowly, make sure that everyone's like taken care of as we're working toward, systemic change, which is huge, and it's really, so I could say that on one level, it's really about having a sustainable movement, so that people don't get burnt out, which is very common in activist movements. Mm-hmm. But it really goes beyond that. It's not just about like, refueling the car and then it's empty. Maybe I shouldn't use a fossil fuel analogy, but here we are. And then when it gets to zero, you just like pump it back up and you're fine. It's like, no, actually the earth, if we're following the rhythms of the earth, it's naturally going to be more, life-giving and generative and not only has room for growth, but also for the natural ebb and flow of life and decay and winter and dormancy. But this gets really important when we're talking about communal care. A lot of the things that, okay, so if we look at, okay, let me, if we're looking at like systemic, like the systemic problem, we're looking at the destruction that is caused by systems of extraction and dominance that have just totally plagued our earth and, basically raped the earth and caused so much pain and destruction. And we are all living with that in our bodies. Like I see it constantly how we're all operating from that sense of urgency and just go, 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 and productivity. Which is hard when we're looking at something so big, like the climate crisis. Of course we want to be like in that urgent mode all the time.
Sure.
But it really is like, it can become extractive itself. And we're all like playing out these systems of oppression, within ourselves and in the ways that we work with each other. So regenerative culture is really about, changing the way that we do the organizing so that we don't just see each other as means to an end, because in the long run, we want to be living in a thriving, sustainable world that is constantly replenishing itself. And so, but if we're not doing that if we're not like living that at the same time, then we're just going to end up kind of recreating the same systems.
Replicating it, exactly. So what kind of regenerative activities does the New York City chapter do, for example?
We have offered lots of different programs. Mostly they're like community building events where people can really connect. One main program that we've offered is something called Extinction Resilience, where people can really work with their climate grief and do so in a way that isn't simply you know, actually, I kind of think about, you know, how in the climate justice movement, we talk about like mitigation and adaptation. Right. And we need both. But sometimes there's like an argument between, well, are we here to just like stop the crisis? Or are we here to like adapt to an already changing world? Like both are true. Right. And it's actually the same with our climate grief, that we need to, yes, like constantly sort of like mitigate those feelings, so that we don't just like wallow in our sadness and get depressed and numb, you know? But also, how can we let those things change us, and how do we learn how to adapt to a changing world? So building those relationships so that we're not just, you know, again, seeing each other as means to an end, so that we're really coming from a place of care and connection. As we're doing the organizing. So we have Extinction Resilience. We offer climate cafes, which is another sort of like circle process for people to talk about what's coming up for them around the climate crisis.
Are you doing any of those like through Zoom calls or anything like that now that we're down in the...
Yeah. Okay. Everything's by Zoom right now. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get some climate cafes up soon. But what's cool about it is, I mean, we're seeing an example of it right here, which is that we've got someone from Boston, someone from New York, and someone from San Francisco all talking. So we're able to offer a lot more that way and connect with what's being offered from other chapters.
For people who, whether they're plugged into a Extinction Rebellion chapter or not, and maybe the answer varies depending on whether they're plugged in or not, but if people are feeling existential dread, partly or entirely because of the climate crisis, what would you recommend they do?
Yeah, join XR, which actually has been called a grief tending movement by Jen Bendel, the guy who's behind Deep Adaptation. And, you know, I guess, well, so that's the first thing. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for letting our existential dread and grief really move us toward action. But also sometimes jumping into action is a way to bypass those feelings and that dread. And again, and this is again why I like want to emphasize the community building and the community aspect of this, is that, because I see this time and time again, when people are so freaked out by the climate crisis, by this thing that's actually out of any one person's control, we all just start to control each other. We try to control each other in our meetings. I think you're laughing because you know what I'm talking about. But other things, there are therapists who specialize in climate grief work. I'm actually working on some programs. I mean, I don't mean to make this like a plug, but sure. There are more climate grief things being offered even outside of XR. And so I'm working on some stuff right now with my colleague, Jana Diamond, who's a somatic therapist who specializes in eco grief. I think that this is really huge. I mean, you know, I personally would recommend like therapy, journaling, talking to people. I think the more that people can be connecting with each other around these crises, the more that we can, you know, I think I'm so surprised actually at how many people feel alone. Cause I feel like I'm with people all the time who were like constantly talking about the climate crisis and all of the intersecting crises, I should say. Uh-huh. Cause it's, and it becomes so much, we're all just like navigating this web of like economic injustice and racial injustice and like all of these things are all woven together. So the more that we just talk about it and give ourselves permission, and give each other permission to talk about these things and honestly, you know, really being in touch with your feelings is not some like woo-woo la-di-da thing. It's like,
no, it's not. It's really a powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chelsea, I wanted to ask you a question. And that is, you know, we talk about existential dread. And I was thinking about yesterday, while you were talking, I was thinking about Biden coming out, was it yesterday, the day before, talking about the existential crisis. In terms of dealing with, you know, having these cafes, are you all actually talking about existential dread, exactly what that is. So, in other words, I find that we use that term, we talk about existential crisis, but we don't necessarily drill down into what we mean by that. Is it the fear of death? Is it the fear of complete annihilation of all life on earth? Is it the dread that there will be no one in the future to remember us? Is it the possibility of turning Earth into Venus? I mean, what is that dread? Or is it just a basic fear of death and a fear of suffering? Right.
Wow. Well, I think that is a great question. And I don't know that it's been so well defined as you just even defined it. I think it includes all of what you just said. And I would add, that it's also fear. I think helplessness really plays into it. So I think there's like a fear. Well, so there's sort of two parts to that, which is one we mentioned earlier, like people feeling guilt about contributing to the crisis,
right?
Especially here in the northern hemisphere and the western hemisphere. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is, I think, wanting to find our place in helping. You know, I think it's natural to want to know. I think a huge part of this is what's my special way of helping, you know, like, how am I being called to be part of the response to this?
Exactly. Well, one of the things I also think about is the sense of, you know, we've been told at least for the last 40 years or so, you know, that there's no alternative to the systems that we have, right? So part of that dread or existential dread is like the death of what we think of as civilization.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so the fear is, you know, are we going to be living in caves if we're not living in a capitalist society? Mm-hmm. And so that part of this fear of death and fear of annihilation is all bound up in our investments in this particular system of coloniality.
Yeah. And there's cognitive dissonance that's going on with that. Like knowing that what we're living in isn't really working.
Right.
You know, exactly. But we're like still taking part and like on a daily basis. I mean, there's like a daily existential crisis of like everything around me is made of plastic and has been extracted from the earth.
And now it's in my body.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's going to wear on people, and us and me, you know, like I totally feel that too. And I think sometimes something that has been liberating for me is sort of turning the question on its head, which is like, what world do we think we're saving? Like, do we want to save this world where we're all like stressed out and hustling and like plastic is in my liver now? You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
So when we can kind of let go of like any attach, I mean, not to be like, oh, that all no, of this no, world no, go, sucks, go you know?
So when we're talking about existential dread plus guilt, plus the fear, deep fear, which we're signifying by, you know, the strength of the word dread, the deep fear plus helplessness sensation that we've been talking about. The antidote, as you've already suggested, is taking action. But some activists feel like it's not enough. Like there is that sensation of, okay, I've done a few protests now. Maybe I've even gotten arrested a couple of times. And it doesn't seem to be obviously working. And I'm back to worrying if I'm doing enough. And I'm back to worrying if there's anything I can actually do. Have you encountered that kind of configuration? What's the antidote to that activist life cycle? What's the next progression into that activist life cycle is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. No, oh my God, this is such a good question. And I think, honestly, it comes back down. Well, for me, it comes back down to two things. And the first one is, again, building community. It's not as sexy. It is so hard, but it's so radical. Like I think about, you know, our demand for citizens assemblies. It's so radical because it's like, we actually have to trust that a subset of the population is going to listen to each other and work it out and listen to experts and come up with some solutions and responses to the crisis. But we can't say that at the end of that citizens assembly that like well, everybody's just going to be a vegan, democratic socialist who meditates every day. You know, like, we actually have to, like, really give ourselves over to a radical kind of trust that is actually way scarier than being arrested. I mean, and I've been arrested several times. I've been through what's called the tombs here in New York City. It was a harrowing experience in a lot of ways. I mean, and I say that as a white cis woman who has a lot of privilege, like, you know, it wasn't that bad compared to a lot of other people's experiences. And it was, like, really traumatic. And I'm not downplaying that as action either, but we have to, like, think of the ecosystem of change, and that there's a place for being in the streets and getting arrested and interfering with the justice and court system and like getting our voices heard there. And over and over again, I'm just being shown how really finding out how to live in a different way in a way that really cares for each other is harder work. It's a day-to-day practice. It takes years, and it's not always exciting, but at the end of it, it's actually really, I mean, I don't know that there's an end of it, but as someone who's lived in communal experiences, like collective living actually for the last, like, over a decade, like, there's a lot of, like, the benefits of that are tenfold. You know, it's harder work, but, like, to really live with each other and care for each other.
And it's also also decolonizing, right?
Yeah.
Because what we're having to relearn is how to be connected to one another, how to be connected in terms of mind, body, spirit, how to be connected to the earth. And so that is exactly what our system does not want to happen.
Yeah.
And it pathologizes that, and to the degree that it doesn't conform to, you know, capitalist modes of production. So,
yeah, 100%. And that's regenerative culture right there. And, you know, over and over again, I'm like, I feel like I'm always like, regenerative culture isn't just like sitting and singing kumbaya with each other and, like, feeling nice and holding hands. It's like, it's so radical. Like,
it's labor too.
It's labor. It's all these things. And this is the second thing I was going to say, is that I think there's a challenge for us to come up with more creative actions. In XRNYC, we've been, and, like, what does action mean? Because I still love direct action. I think that there can be something really powerful about direct action that, like, sparks something new in someone's mind and like shifts the consciousness. And so in XRNYC, we've really been thinking about, like, how can our actions be more regenerative? Like, how can it show that regenerative culture in a way? And I don't know that we found the answers, but, like, but I think that the exploration is really important. And, yes. Like, 'cause I get tired of the same old marches and the same, like, whose streets are streets, you know, like, yeah, this is what democracy looks like.
It feels good, but it only gets you so far.
Yeah. And then when it's, like, the same thing over and over again, and you're just kind of playing cat and mouse with the cops, it's like, what are we really doing here? I don't know. You know, I can totally see why someone would get, I get bored with it, you know. So maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm, like, giving myself away as an activist.
Well, but different things work for different people, and different things work in different contexts. Like, there are situations, yeah, political situations, where walking down the street chanting "whose streets are streets" is a meaningful act. And there are people who haven't done that too many times before, for whom that's a really major thing to do. And if you've done it 100 times, then it becomes less major. But likewise, I think, and I love the observation that you made, that real community becomes an antidote to persistent dread and the negative psychological consequences that come from all these situations.
Yeah.
Whatever gives community to you heals.
Yeah.
Mentally and emotionally. It sounds like, is that a fair?
Yeah. I
think that sound consonant with Extinction Rebellion's regenerative culture.
Yeah. I think that's spot on. And again, it kind of comes back to, like, not preaching one way or the other, that it's really about, I think it's a different orientation. It's like allowing a lot of different ways of being. And even if it doesn't, like, confirm your own way of being, you know?
Is there anything else that you would like to say today, Reverend Chelsea?
I guess one last thing I would say is, like, to any XR chapter, regen is so important. Like, let it not, it's not just siloed into, like, the working, you know, the one working group. Like, it right, really exactly. needs to be integrated into everything that we do.
Amen.
Reverend Chelsea McMillan, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you.
This is wonderful. Thank you.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Trump zealots who stormed the Capitol building on January 6th were part of a growing far-right movement.
Break it down! Break it down! Open the door! Let's go!
Tune in to OutFM on Tuesday, February 9th at 8 p.m. for an interview with two longtime writers from the blog Three Way Fight who have studied the right intensively. They'll break down the right's conflicting factions, including racists, misogynists, homophobes, and transphobes. That's Tuesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
WBAI's local station board is the Pacifica Foundation board responsible for advising local management and operations. The next meeting of the local station board will be Wednesday, February 10th at 7 p.m. This February meeting, the LSB will deal with filling LSB and Pacifica National Board committees and task forces. It will also consider who will be taking on this work as we go forward this year. Again, that's Wednesday, February 10th at 7 p.m. The meeting, held through the Zoom remote meeting service, can be accessed by calling 929-205-2099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. Again, the telephone number to call is 929-205-6099 and the meeting ID is 922-457-2995. A link to the instructions, including for listening over the web and how to submit written comments, will be available through WBAI's main webpage. Hope you'll join WBAI's local station board meeting. It includes an opportunity for public comment. Wednesday, February 10th at 7 p.m.
Was Extinction Rebellion, and that is heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. That's coming up in the next hour, followed by Out FM. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. You can pledge and donate to this radio station, which is a tax deduction, FYI, anytime by calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or go to givetowbai.org online. We solely are reliant to listeners like yourselves showing support for this radio station since 1960. Mind you,